I have a note to talk about refreshing an Ember app. I have no idea what that means. This is a problem. I'm in the middle of something. I'm like, this would be a great podcast topic. Throw it on the podcast notes, but I don't really elaborate. It's like, oh yeah, refreshing an Ember app.
It was that day we talked about like having a message pop up for whenever users click a link to just hit command R.
That's exactly what it was. That's really what it was.
No, I was joking. I was literally kidding.
No. But you just reminded me what it actually was.
Really? Because yeah. I was thinking that would be one way to avoid a lot of bugs. Just a little message. By the way, command R.
You've been using this app for more than 3 minutes. You may want to reload.
What was the situation?
It was from our Ember Map Slack, which, by the way, if you're an Ember Map subscriber, you can join our Slack. It's awesome. But someone asked, like, someone's using my Ember app. And I deploy a new version. Is there a way that I can just like reload their app, but not have them like not do a window reload or anything like that? Is there a way I can just like refresh the Ember app? That's exactly what it was. And now my note for refreshing an Ember app makes a ton of sense. but yeah, that's the question was basically like, you know, when someone clicks a link. Let's say they're using your Ember app, you deploy a new version, and they go and they like click a link, they're not going to get that new version. They're still doing like the single page routing
right.
on the old version.
And this is a problem that crops up with SPAs.
Yeah, yes. It's not specific to Ember, it's all SPAs.
Right, but it's like something you wouldn't have thought about using server-side traditional architecture.
And I've had this happen to me. People will have like a tab open for 2 weeks, and they'll be like, yeah, that feature just went away.
Yeah.
And then like I'll go over to their desk, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. And then I just refresh and it works. And I'm like, how long has your tab been open for?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty cool sign. If they're keeping to me, that's always a victory. Like if I'm working on an Ember app and someone has their app open long enough that, and they're using it every day, that I've deployed like a new version or something like that. To me, that's a great sign that they trust the app and that they haven't had to reload those assets in 2 weeks. That's pretty awesome. You know, it's funny though, like as far as bugs go and just the notion of introducing new states and the complexity of SPAs, this just happened with me yesterday when we were doing the Heroku deploy. Remember, we were looking at a PR build I had done two AJAX requests like within app transitions on the client. And then the third one like didn't work. And we were like, we just fixed that. And then it's like, what? And you refresh it and like the PR build was gone. It was gone.
We had merged the PR, which causes the PR build to get torn down.
But like you are looking at a stale app and you just have no idea.
In your case, you're not even getting like an old version. You're looking at an app that no longer exists.
Yeah, exactly. So that URL is like, the representation of the URL that you're looking at is just not true anymore. So it's like stale in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's just one particular case of the more general problem of the fact that, yeah, you can deal with stale things when you're building SPAs, whether those things are data requests or even the code itself.
Yeah, yes.
So it's interesting.
This particular problem, the way that I've solved this in the past is that when I deploy a new front end, I also ping, let's just say the back end or some API service. And I say like the version is now like this, and I'll use like the git SHA, or I'll just have a counter that's like the version is now old version plus one.
Yeah. I remember you made an add-on like this.
Yes.
TED,
yes.
Yep. And it was so cool. Cause the first time we saw this, this was like when we were really going all in on the SPAs.
Yeah.
And we could only go back in time now and just beat ourselves over the head.
Yeah. There you go. No. And
it just showed a little thing and it was like, oh, the, user management tool has been updated. Click here to reload.
Right. The whole idea was as an add-on, so anyone could do it. It used our deployment strategy. So it would just send the version along with the deployment.
Pretty
cool. So you didn't even have to figure this out.
Pretty cool.
And it was like a service that that was injected into your components, or you could inject it into your components and then use
So you could say like if.
Yeah. Or maybe it was like a contextual component that yielded something, but you could do if like
version has been updated or something.
Exactly. And then we would display a little toast at the bottom that just said something like, the version has changed. Click here to reload it. I remember that. I remember someone that was like a hardcore backend engineer I'm never touching JavaScript.
Yep.
I hate all of you. You know the types I'm talking about.
You're ruining my life.
God, the pain that I must have caused him.
Let's just not think about it. Let's sweep that under the rug.
I remember the first time he saw that. That was like one of the, like, he was like, man, this stuff is really cool.
Yeah,
like, that's awesome. I remember him being like really impressed. And it's like, yeah, that's like kind of stuff that's
the kind of capabilities that are unlocked. So, yeah.
Now,
you want a new app toaster? Just go build a GraphQL API. Yeah. That's all you need to do.
Yeah. Set up an API, set up an SPA, get your build tool right, and then boom, you get your little toast. Now, I think this is like the best way today of how to, quote, like refresh an Ember app.
Right. So the question was like, when I'm in this situation, I basically do some form of this. I like notify my new, I tell my user somehow. And maybe I'm not proactive about it, so I end up responding to like a support request. Yeah. But basically, like at a technical level, what do I do? And it's like I have them reload the app. And the question was, is there a better way to do this?
Yeah.
So they don't even have to reload it. And maybe like, maybe their app is really complex and like the initial boot kind of takes a long time. So they really don't want people to, maybe they're pushing like CSS changes several times a day and they would rather just be able to not disturb their users. You can imagine like if I had Slack open and every day I had to reload the whole app or something like that. Snarky comment. Go ahead.
No, just imagine like you're typing a message. It's just like pop up, reload.
Don't you want the latest features? But so he was really wondering if there was a better way to do it. And right now it seems like he was kind of thinking about like even like injecting the new code into the client or something like that.
Yeah, almost like a way, like kind of like Fastboot can rehydrate some existing HTML. Like imagine if you could do that, you could like rehydrate an existing Ember app.
Yeah. It makes me think of the
live reload thing.
Live reload stuff, but doesn't it also come from how does Phoenix and Erlang work? Doesn't Erlang have fundamental language support for like hot code swapping?
Yeah, well, I don't know Erlang. I think it's like OTP or something. But yes, you can. Yes, I think the state is stored outside.
Stored outside the code, so that way you have basically like app as a state function of state, and so you have your global atom always.
So we can add this to the list of things to do. Just set up an Erlang server.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If you want your little toast, you get an Erlang server going. No problem. See you in 2 years. But obviously that's like super hard, and like obviously we're not running our apps like this. So just the conversation was really like, this is not how anyone's thinking when they're building their app. So like to actually get this work would be insane. Also the fact that like OS X asked me to restart my computer when it installs an update. It's like, you know, if Apple hasn't figured this out yet, or if Apple can tolerate, asking me to restart my computer every once in a while, I think that's probably the best bet for now.
You know, I think that's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. If Apple hasn't figured this out, that you know, small Ember team, we don't need to worry about it.
Yeah. But there is something like you could absolutely empathize with this person if they are wanting their users to see like CSS changes that they're making throughout the day.
Yeah. Now this is kind of interesting because CSS you could reload.
Yeah.
And you're not, it's hard to reload like a component because that component has, you have already have an existing component with its own state. So how do you reload that? But CSS, so maybe there is like a continuum of things that you can just automatically reload versus. Like,
I think the easiest thing to do would be if you really cared about this, if this was really important to the UX of your app, is you could mark state if the user started editing something that wasn't basically serialized into the URL, and you could just know if they have transient state that's important or not. And if not, just reload the app for them. If you could figure out a way to say, man, maybe you start with whitelisting certain parts of your app.
Yeah.
If I'm on this route and I haven't done anything, no user interaction since I just reload the app.
You could do
their session's still going to be around. Like the URL will have the information needed to render the app in the right way. So you can imagine a lot of apps where that would be a pretty nice UX, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like a read-only app.
Yeah.
You could even use like a nice declarative API. It was like a component, like is reloadable or can reload, and you can just drop that in the templates that are.
And if you're in an editing blog post page, you just don't want to do that. Yeah. So you could just drop that in and just say, no, you know, don't, it's not reloadable.
Yep.
I mean, you think about like banking websites, they log you out after 10 minutes. So there's precedent for this kind of thing.
Yeah,
so,
there's nothing better than alt tabbing to my banking tab and just seeing your session has expired.
Well, there's, you know, auto fill in passwords.
Yeah, and then 18 freaking clicks to get that PDF file I was viewing.
I was making a video today and I like logged into GitHub and I just did it with like the auto fill in password thing. That's okay, right?
Yeah.
I meant to ask you about this.
Oh, because it's like in the video.
Yeah, I don't want to like publish it.
So anything. all of our stuff's just owned.
I think I might have just put my one password into a public video on embermap.com.
So like you typed your master password or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So someone's gonna like
take
the audio file from the keyboard and map that over and just boom, you're done.
Yikes. It's worth a risk. That is interesting though. Speaking of SPAs, we were gonna talk about SPAs. You have some weird note in our podcast topics list. That's like,
this is another one, but I just
SPAs haven't. Are great unless you have anything that changes in your app, any requirements that you don't know about, any features that you're not aware of.
Yeah, SPAs are great unless these 20 things that you're going to run into in the next 10 minutes.
Yeah, all the things that make building software hard. Tell me what you mean by that, Ryan. Tell me how you feel.
There are, yeah.
Have a coffee.
Here we go, therapy session.
Yeah.
There are certain apps I work on that are SPAs that are really hard. They're just really hard. And then there's other ones I work on that's like, I'm cruising. This is great. Like SPAs are the best thing ever. And I was trying to think about like why, what are the characteristics about the hard ones and what are the characteristics about the great ones and how many of those actually come down to like actual technical problems versus like just like organizational or product things. And I've noticed that, like, first of all, I noticed on apps that have like deadlines or a lot of feature requests, like deadlines and a lot of feature requests, which there are. There's apps.
Is your list of literally the constraints, like every practical software team? No, I'm sorry, I'm giving you a hard time.
But most software teams do like say we need to get these like 45 things out the door in the next 3 months, and the reality is if we only get 15 out, that's fine. But there's a hard deadline of 3 months and there's a hard list of features. And that's a really bad combination for an SPA. And I've seen, you know, we've worked with people that have gone to SPAs for this type of situation. And part of our job was to talk them out of using an SPA because of this.
Tell me why you think that's a bad, why is it hard? Why is it bad?
Yeah, I think that there is, when you look at a web app and then you look at an SPA, the complexity between those two.
Server rendered web app
versus SPA.
JavaScript.
Yeah. I think, and complexity, SPA. I'm being kind of vague with complexity. I think the amount of moving pieces and the amount of knowledge that everyone on the team needs to have, it's not just like, oh yeah, you just need to know JavaScript. You already know HTTP and you already know APIs. Now we just need to, you're going to use a JavaScript layer to communicate with it. That's true. But there's all these little things that bite you. There's all like, how do you load data? How do you do validations? And these things are so, so much more complex in the SPA world than they are in the server rendered world. And then when you're up against like a huge feature set, where like you work on a feature and it's done and then you go on to the next feature and you'll never, ever touch that first feature again. We've all been on software teams that are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a really bad situation for an SPA.
Okay. So first thought is like, that's obviously not a good, that's not good marketing for SPA as one true architecture. Like that would be an argument that's like, there are places where SPAs are not a right fit, which is on the one hand, you could say it's obviously true.
Right.
But on the other, it's like, a lot of us are working on trying to make SPA development easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're getting at, which I would agree with, is like, you know, that the building an SPA never got as easy as quickly as we all thought it might be, might get when we started working on this stuff 5 years ago. The first time we were like, oh, your server only sends back JSON. I remember that. I remember the first time I was like making the Rails server and I was like, wait, it doesn't have to render any HTML. It's just going to render JSON. Like that was such a huge deal when it first came out. People were like, that's crazy, right? That was a big deal. And you can start to see this, like how fast that architecture changed and you're thinking about things differently and you're writing SPAs like this, made you think like, this is going to simplify so much because look at my server app, look at my Rails code. It is so much simpler. It is crazy. I get to delete the assets directory. I get to delete the views directory. Seriously.
Yeah. It's more than that though. It's there's another layer here where it's like, I was writing JavaScript in Rails to do like autocomplete and stuff like that, but it's Rails doesn't really have a convention around this. Everything else in Rails, like the modeling layer, the controllers, the URLs, right, are all conventional. But then I get into like this JavaScript land and I'm just kind of like feeling around in the dark.
Right.
My app looks different from everyone else's app. But with these SPAs.
Yeah, these people come along and say, look, we don't want to tolerate that anymore. We want to treat this like a real thing.
Yeah,
let's make it a first class citizen. And you're like preaching to me, right? Because I'm experiencing all this pain and I feel like I hate not having good architecture here. And these are people who thought about it from the beginning.
Exactly. So this is, yeah. Now, yeah, this is a trap where it's like you're thinking like, okay, this is going to solve the architecture problem because there's clear structure, there's clear best practices here.
We now have a boundary, like our Rails app doesn't render views anymore. It's like amazing.
Perfect HTTP boundary that we can just draw a line straight through. And then we also get amazing stuff. We get like testing, first class support for testing for JavaScript apps. We actually get to write the JavaScript apps in like kind of like the environment they're going to be in.
Right.
We're writing JavaScript that runs in the browser.
Right. So I think there's so much cool stuff about this, but you know, one way I was thinking about this because we were talking about this topic and it came up like on Twitter and some of our friends were talking about it. At the beginning, if you think about it, one of our biggest complaints is like the data stuff. It's almost like ignored almost. It's like you can use, you know, Ember data works for these cases, but like you can use all this other stuff. But if you look at, this is not just Ember. This is everyone doing SPA development. The amount of focus and energy spent on dealing with the client-side only concerns versus the rest of the pie, the rest of the puzzle that needs to be solved in order to develop to ship a production application. It's like the majority of it is the client-side only stuff. And then it's like, well, what about persistence? And it's like, if you think about when Ember first came around, dude, like Ember data has a thing that's like the goal of string inflector is to be active record, active support compatible. So like when we were first building Ember and Ember apps, the core team, the people building Ember, developing Ember were like, let's make it work for a great use case, which is with Rails. And so things like the inflections, which Rails already has precedent for, is going to tell us when I make a get request to slash users, then I am going to get all the users from the users collection. And if I do a find, like all that stuff, all those little things that make working with something like Rails so great and tie together that end-to-end experience, right? And so the idea was like, yeah, Ember is going to hook into something like this, but it couldn't just hook into Rails, even though Rails was like the dominant influence because it's like, it's a JavaScript app. It can talk to anything that produces this API.
Right. And yeah, it goes back to like, I said this earlier, there was a clear HTTP boundary. So Rails is on the other side of that boundary. So like, just if you think about the architecture, it shouldn't matter what's on the other side of that boundary. It's a clear boundary. It's HTTP.
Right. So this is the thing where it's like, I think there was this idea that it was going to be, it was made to work with something. And the idea was like that integration point was going to be simpler than it turned out to be. And also like at the beginning, you're making, everyone kind of realized eventually that you're making two apps. You're now responsible for two applications. And at the beginning of Ember's life cycle, we were putting Ember apps inside of our Rails apps or other, whatever server framework we were using. You know, we had Ember App Kit and then now we have Ember CLI. eventually we realize like these are actually two different things. Even if we're making a back end that's specifically for the front end, like the boundary being so clearly delineated, so such a hard line in the sand, was like, it's just better to treat these two things separately. And to be fair, there are amazing things that you get by doing that. We've worked with projects where we literally haven't had to worry about the back end at all. And if you don't have to think about it and worry about it, like to the extent, if you don't have to worry about the implementation of it and you can just use something like Mirage, then you can get very, very far. And it's amazing to not have to think about that stuff.
Totally.
So even being able to collaborate with teams in that way is just something that you wouldn't have thought of before. And there are people who are like stronger on the back end and stronger on like the front end concerns. And for them to be able to just use a mocking layer and be able to basically just ignore the HTTP side, not have to start Redis, like not have to get Ruby running on it. Like why, you know, I just want to like work on the front end.
Yeah. And it's more than just, it's more than just using mocking. It's that you have a clear contract. Like you just have a clear, like this is a request I'm going to send, this is a response I'm going to get.
Right, exactly. But on the flip side, the problem is like all the stuff we're talking about, which is like the reality is that backend layer is not mature enough to the point where you don't have to think about it. And eventually you do and will have to think about it. So if you don't understand it, it's going to be problematic. If you have to make that, if you want to do a weekend project and you are the one who's responsible for implementing the entire thing, you're now building two applications. And like, this is something I've come to believe should be in like the React getting started guide or the Vue getting started guide or the Ember getting started guide. Like I almost feel like it's disingenuous. The way Adam put it when he was talking about this was like, if you're teaching someone web development from scratch and you teach them HTML and then CSS and they're kind of leveling up, and then now it's time to go from like your static pages to dynamic pages. It's like, what's the next step? And if your answer is like JavaScript to kind of like level up, the reality is like on its own, JavaScript is not really going to get you to the next level right away, especially if you're just writing it in the client. Now, you would have to teach them like Node or something if you wanted to build a dynamic app with JavaScript. But the point is you need some sort of backend to add a dynamics to build a dynamic site. So that's why going to like PHP or Ruby would be a logical one way you could get to a next step with like powering up the person's development skills.
Yeah. And it's not even about it's not even about like JavaScript and Node. It's about like the server component.
Right.
How does HTTP work? How does the communication
learning
work?
React from knowing HTML and CSS is not really setting you up to
build an app, build a production app. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. So now, is there a future where the way we build apps is changed? And I mean, I'm fully convinced of that.
Absolutely.
I just added a feature to Ember Map and I did the normal thing. And if I look at what I changed in the back end, it was beautiful Ruby code. It was beautiful. Rails is still beautiful and it's an absolute joy to write. Was it like value added code? No. Was it like complex, high-level, strategic. It's very rudimentary in the sense of it's not doing anything rich. It's not anything specific to our application, really. Now, of course, there's times where you need to query, like do a specific query of data, and having a rich access to a rich queryable language like Active Record is wonderful. But for the most part, our backends are very commoditized.
Yes.
So there is a future maybe where it looks like that. But today, web development does not look like that. Today, if you want to make an SPA and you want to make a whole app, a production app, you need to build two apps, one being the API. And so it's going to be that's going to be way more complex than if you are doing something like a simple traditional Rails app.
Mm-hmm. I don't think this is going to sound weird, but I don't, the complexity doesn't, to me, the complexity doesn't come from the backend app. The complexity comes from the fact that you have two apps and they need to communicate with each other.
That's a great way to put it. I 100% agree. Because it's what you're talking about is like there's an incidental complexity from the fact that there aren't conventions around these things, that there's too much flexibility, that there's no guardrails. And that's exactly what happens. Like, what's the stuff that takes so much time? It's like, what is this thing called? Where is this thing lit? Like, how do I do all that? You know what I mean? It's incidental.
That's great. Yes.
So I think the way you said it is just spot on. And if you had a framework that was trying to make these things more tightly coupled, you could imagine that framework being able to eliminate a lot of that incidental complexity. But today, that's not what we have, neither in an opinionated side like Ember or in a flexible tool like React, which is going to be even more flexible and even more leave up to you to make things work together. So, yeah.
Yeah, so bringing this back to where we started this, I think these things, basically everything we just talked about, that makes SPA development hard. But
you were saying it's hard for a certain kind of app or a certain kind of situation at the least.
Well, I think if you have, like, if you're under a tight deadline to add a lot of features.
And those features are a certain kind of feature, right?
So yeah.
That's the other thing. If you're making a certain kind of app with certain kind of features.
That's great, yes.
The complexity is going to be, you're going to want to invest in the harder architecture so that you can get the benefits of the SPA architecture and the benefits of like having a full approach for client-side code.
Right. And so I guess like just as like quick way, like the more stuff that needs to be duplicated on the front end and back end, that's where that comes from. That's where the incidental complexity comes from.
So you're saying if things end up needing to be duplicated, that's a sign that maybe SPA is wrong choice or like not as the benefits aren't as high.
I don't want to say wrong choice because I think there's like technical requirements that ultimately say that like you should use an SPA.
Right.
Right. Like we need like a lot of data and it needs to be like real time and live updating. You're going to lean towards SPA.
Right,
it needs to work offline. You're going to lean towards SPA. You can have apps like that have a lot of features or maybe a tight deadline and they're going to be painful. Or you could have an app that doesn't, it's real time, it's SPA, but you know you have a year to develop it and refactor it. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be less painful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you have more time, it's going to be less painful.
Basically, it's just it's not the current setup with SPA architecture is not optimized for time to like minimizing time to development.
Yes,
it's not really what it's about. I mean, that's not even what the value proposition is. Well, I guess that's not fair. Sometimes it is. The argument is that. But basically, it's you just have to recognize everything is less mature than an environment like Rails, which has been optimized for 10 years and always has been basically focused on the pragmatic case, whereas the SPA stuff is more about, again, a vision for the future.
Yes. Yeah. That's thing. You can't look at a Rails app and say, okay, normally I would just build a server rendered app, but for the Rails component, I'm only going to build the API layer. So that's going to take me, I'm going to be 10 times faster there because I'm not building. But on the client side app, I'm going to be slow there because I'm building a new client side app. So you can't just say like, it's going to take roughly the same amount of time because I'm moving logic out of the server rendered component into a client rendered component.
Because that's true. However, you're ignoring the costs of integration costs.
Right.
And that ends up being a huge.
Huge. Like it's not like, and we'll do 20% for integration. It's like 200,000%. No, it's like, mm-hmm. 100%. Yes, there's a big integration cost.
Right.
And so, I've just, again, I was thinking about like what SPA apps I loved working on that like, SPA was perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's those apps that like, they have a really small feature set. They're made like the problem they're trying to solve can only be solved with an SPA, but they small feature set.
Real
they
time,
only do a few syncing, things,
stuff like that.
Right. And I've worked on apps that also have those components, but they have a bazillion features and they need to work in all these different contexts and code gets duplicated on the back and front end. Those have been difficult. Those have been really, really difficult.
Now, this is all coming from the comment that you dropped in the Slack like a couple weeks ago or whatever. What about the thing you just told me about Nordstrom's website?
Yeah. So
that's an interesting kind of example.
Yeah. So, but this might be that they have a small feature set. They they have
They have enough resources to cover the complexity, but what they end up with is actually a better product. But it's just the reality is it's not going to be something that the team could do in a weekend.
In short, feature set and resources. Yeah. So it can be like interchangeable, yeah, right? Like you can bring down the feature set by bringing up the resources. There are websites out there that I think that are...
Just for context, want to just tell the story
quick. I don't even know if it's like a JavaScript app, but they do have JavaScript all over their website. And it's the interactions are just, they're amazing. They're beautiful. They're like me as a shopper, I'm looking for clothes. I select some filters. I go back to another page to look at other clothes and all the filters, like I'm looking at shirts on one page and suits on another. All those filters carry over, even though they're like completely different. Someone thought about like, okay, how does the size here translate over here? How do like the colors or the style translate from this page to this page?
So it's a well-executed JavaScript application.
Yeah. And they have like drop-downs and pop-ups. And there's a bunch of JavaScript sprinkled all over the page. That's just, it's unbelievable. And
that's cool.
I'm sure it took them a long time to build. I'm sure it wasn't an easy app to build. Feature wise, it's pretty small. Like the feature set of it is, it's like,
but it's done well, and it's done using not just server rendering, because you couldn't really pull that.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, just from, I don't know like what framework they used or whatever, but you just know from the interactions that there's client side code running. Mm-hmm. I was thinking like, I wonder if the small feature set has an impact on the building this type of app.
Right.
We've all been to e-commerce sites that are unpleasant and awful.
Yeah.
So it's not, again, it's not about like the technical requirements. Just wonder if it's like, feature set is small and if you're not battling tons of features and a tight deadline, you can actually get this stuff right.
Right.
There's a million other things that play into this, right? Like product work and all that. But yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I do think it's very interesting. There is something so appealing to me about the approach of writing the client app. And even if you're teaching someone, teaching them about using JavaScript to render and to add dynamism. But I think the fact that another aspect of this that we were talking about was like something really good about full stack environments like Rails or Laravel is like you can hear DHH give a keynote presentation and he's talking about patterns he's using in Basecamp or Eileen at GitHub. And because you're using a Rails environment, they're using a Rails environment. Of course, there's things that are different because of the scale or the particular problems they face. But at the end of the day, like you really are both sitting up there on the 10th floor. Whereas if we were talking to another team using Ember, think about our architecture and how Ember is just this part of it. Thinking about our fast boot stuff. Think about the Rails gems that we use. Think about the way all the things we've dealt with our API. Think about how we do auth. I mean, none of that can be really truly talked about in the same cohesive way for other Ember apps, because there's just nothing assumed about the back end.
Yeah, that's so DHH gives a talk, tells you how to do something. You can envision that from what I need to do to like all the way to production, and there's no gaps. Where if someone asked us how do I do X in Ember, we would basically tell them how to do that in Ember, but that wouldn't be enough to deploy to production. Yeah. There'd be a huge missing piece.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same as when I was first learning about GraphQL and I was watching this talk, and it's like everything you need to know about GraphQL in a component, and it was like in four components or something, and it was great. It was talking about like the data fetching component and the subscription component in React, but then it's like, here's your data fetching component, and like now you're subscribed to a GraphQL query from your server, and it's like, so I want to go home and try this out. It's like, how do I get the GraphQL server part? It's like... Oh, right. Well, you have to make that as well. Like, how do I make a GraphQL server? Like,
here's, 10 different libraries.
It's just a completely different thing. Whereas like there's the Rails story has the progressive disclosure of complexity. There's a progressive level that is introduced over time. As you need additional complexity, you opt into it. Whereas with an SPA from the beginning, you are at a very high level of complexity given the fact that you're writing two apps that have to talk to each other.
So I have a question. Like, do we think that like SPAs will move towards this, like, okay, we've got the boundaries right now. We have the boundaries, right? HTTP is like a good boundary, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of like duplication and mm-hmm. it's hard to do stuff, right? It takes time to do stuff. So do you think we'll move towards like a SPA framework that has both a server component and like kind of like Meteor, right?
Yeah, that's what Meteor I was thinking like this? Of. That's what they were trying to do, right? I remember using it like with a tutorial of it, but I'm not sure what happened to it. This is the other thing is like, you do want that. You want there to be one conceptual app. You want there to be that majestic monolith as DHH says it, which is like, I'm working on conceptually the single thing that's powering the single website and all the pieces are working together. If you go back and listen to Yehuda's talks about Ember when he was first working on it, him and Tom, they were making this point and they believe this, that like, unless you're thinking about the entire picture, you can't nail every aspect of it. So they did, I think, believe this and understand this. The problem is if the whole picture ends up being very, very, very hard and you don't have unlimited resources to work on it, then what's going to happen is like parts of it are going to move faster. The parts that are being implemented kind of at the flexible layer are going to leapfrog you, because it actually turns out to be a much harder problem than maybe you thought initially. So there's something where you want the pieces to be able to move fast and to get those learnings from all the different vibrant parts of the community, but you still want someone at the top who is able to stitch them together and eliminate all of those pieces of incidental complexity, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe we just need 5, 6 years, 10 years of individual pieces battling like an ecosystem,
right? But then you get the boundaries right and you can plug it together where you know, basically there's an interface almost,
because you and I think DHH, I mean, I don't know his story, but I think that it would be very hard to build Rails without SQL. Building a bunch of web apps beforehand and seeing all the, you know, the SQL HTTP boundary was that boundary was well in place long before Rails came along.
Right. That's a good point. And even that's happening now with things like GraphQL becoming more standardized or whatever. So once there's like hosted GraphQL, I mean, we've already talked about this, like one path there, if you are teaching someone web development, I guess this is like a counter. It's like they learn HTML, CSS, and now you can like, let's go to Ember. You install Ember, you have an application template, it's HTML and CSS, you're already good to go. You want some data there, install Ember Firebase, create an app, and now you've got data. I mean, that is incredible. You don't have to learn SQL. You don't have to install Ruby. I mean, that's amazing. And maybe that can carry you farther in the future than it does today, where that's taking you, or you're using like...
there's more services like...
Google Docs. Like, yeah, exactly. Like a spreadsheets in the cloud kind of thing as your backend for the first year of your application's life. I mean, really. And then like, you're getting to the point where you need more scale and you need to learn the additional stuff. But I think that's a pretty compelling thing. Or we talked about like Mirage, deploying Mirage.
Yeah. So the thing with like Google Docs is like, you're kind of locking yourself into like a quote bad production decision where you want, I think you want something that's like of just.
But the Ember data layer makes that pretty good. I mean, like it's the same thing with like, yeah, I mean, it's not mature. It's not as mature, right? It's not as mature. But you can deploy a Rails app with SQLite because the SQL is so standardized that it's fine. So if the Ember data stuff was rich enough to get all your queries and you really could basically abstract away the network layer, then it would be okay to like switch from Google Docs to like a JSON API backend. Yep. Maybe that's like the next step. But like, I do think it's really nice to think about like, you want to get a CRUD app done and deployed to production this weekend for your side project, and you're going to do it with Vue because you've never used it before. Like, there should be a really good story for that. And that involves like persistent server side data. And like, that should be part of the guide, because like, even though it's technically not their responsibility, and like, I haven't looked at Vue's docs, I'm just using it as an example, but like, even though it's not their responsibility, doesn't mean it's not a concern of the person. So it's like, oh yeah, well yeah, you can make an API with whatever you want, but it's like, but wait, I want you to tell me what to do, because like I'm building an Ember app and it's like, what do I do next?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. Yeah. Yes. I mean, you want the person to be successful.
Yeah.
And that's part, they have to deploy their app to be successful. So yeah. Yes.
I really think like a Mirage thing that worked, or Firebase that could work, would be awesome. I do think, wasn't the Ember tutorial using Firebase at one point to get you like dynamic data?
I don't know. Firebase would be great,
though. I think
Firebase
it did at one point. But yeah, I think Firebase is pretty good. But yeah, that's the other thing. Yehuda recently gave a really interesting talk with some great slides about the values of Ember, why Ember still exists in 2019. Like, what does it have to offer? And one of them was like, we believe that beginners should use the same tools as experts. And again, that really aligns with like a lot of what DHH says, where it's like, we're not, we're making things to empower kind of everybody, but you have to be willing to learn how to use it, right? But at the end of the day, like DHH would say it's wrong if I'm using, if like Active Record is in Rails, and most people use it this way, but over here I'm using it like this. Like that would be a signal that there's something wrong with the abstraction, and he should either figure out how to pull that back into the general framework, so that, you know, something like Stimulus, like he extracted it. Like he's like, I'm making a Rails app and I should be using the same patterns as everyone else. Again, with some leeway, like but for the vast majority of my app, is 80 to 90% of the people are writing JavaScript for a Rails app, they should be doing it the same way. If 80-90% of people are doing joins on their SQL tables in a Rails app, they should be doing it the same way. So the question is like, if 80-90% of Ember developers are talking to a backend or querying data over a backend somehow, but they're all doing it completely differently. And again, this applies for like React developers too, because you can follow people who are doing React development and like they all use wildly different backends, which influences their front end architecture. It influences everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So you end up with things that just look differently. And so that's where that mantra breaks down, where it's like, are beginners using the same tools as the backend people? Well, let's look at your Vue app at Netflix or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, we have all these service. It's like it all of a sudden it becomes completely different. And it's like, that's not this same empowerment story that we had when I was learning Rails, and I know that GitHub uses Rails and that everything I'm learning is what they're doing. There's something really powerful about that. And it's this whole app thing that's like very empowering.
Yeah,
and like we kind of lose that.
A great example of this is, you said this before, but the fact that GitHub had this multi-database connection, it was complicated. It was, you know, big site, need this stuff. And they got it backported into Rails.
Right.
So like, actually, how GitHub is connecting to their database is the same way you, brand new Rails new developer, are. And that's super,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's really like the you know, the celery test of, do we believe in empowering beginners and intermediates with the same stuff that the experts are using? Are we really rolling back solutions in, you know? And I think in JavaScript these days, in all of these communities, I think all these communities are, maybe it's because the problem space isn't well known yet, but it's very easy for, it seems to me that it's very easy for teams to go and say, we're going to go and do this solution. And it's not the same mentality as GitHub investing years of Eileen and her team's effort to roll back in what they were doing back into Rails. Because Rails claims to attack the entire problem space. And so if it's not handling this area of their app, it's a problem that needs to be fixed. But if Ember is not handling the problem of batch persisting multiple operations, well, that's outside of Ember's domain, because that's a backend concern. And Ember is not a backend framework. It's like just the front end. So people are going to be solving that, but there's no real path for them to roll it back in. And for us, everyone who's writing an Ember app, who's doing batch persists, bulk operations or whatever, to do it the same way.
Yeah.
And it's a problem.
That is a problem. Also, the way you phrase that is a really nice way of visualizing just how big the problem space is. Because you can just see all those components and how that.
And it's like, and there is a path there where like you have Ember Simple Auth. And so you can say every Ember developer uses Ember Simple Auth to authenticate their application. But like, again, that's half of the puzzle. At TED, we had like a thing for the front end and for the back end. So if you had a Rails app, you install the back end thing and then you install the front end thing and boom, that's like what you wanted. Now, Auth is effectively abstracted away from the application developer. But like until we can get that in the open source world, it's a problem. Like it's kind of a problem.
Right.
And if everyone was using like the same tools on the back end, you can imagine like a simple auth Rails gem, simple auth Phoenix gem, and like that's very close. Like basically you just plug those in, but like that doesn't really happen because there's just too much flexibility. There's too many people who want to do things differently. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. It's really hard to
validations,
find.
Validations. Like,
yeah, validations.
There should be at the least a front end and a back end that just talk to each other. Boom, you're done.
Generally, these like an auth implementation is going to drive from a use case, and that usually involves one type of back end, one type of front end. So to then go say, okay, I got it working Rails. Let me go make a Django version of this.
Right.
It's just like. Right. I'm not the right person to do that.
Right. And now you've fractured like the community and the resources that could go to that. Whereas if you're doing a Rails app, you're going to cover the whole use case for the entire application. Now, if we were moving to a world where that's made of services, then you can imagine, you know, a Tori provider thing that you add and boom, you have GitHub auth to your app. And that is exactly what like the real people are doing on the scaled versions of their apps. And it's just that. It's just that we're not there yet for so many things.
Hey, so yeah, we've talked about this, but like, I wonder if that's how you shrink
the problem space.
This like, problem space is huge. So maybe you shrink it by saying like, yeah, we have like an auth service that's a third party service, and I don't know, all these third party auth services conform to the same API, and then what's XKCD? That's like now we have 16 implementations.
Yeah. It's just hard because that's like a long ways away. And it's not really helpful to people who want to be empowered to move to the next level today. Like, how do you send email in an Ember app? You know, there might be a few in a JavaScript app. Let's just say JavaScript app. There might be a future where.
Yeah, you need a backend component, but that's not always true because like something like an email course, there's actually a way where you can use something like Drip and just go directly to them.
Right.
But like if you're trying to solve the general case, how do I send an email? Now you need your own backend.
Right.
Yeah. And that's boom, big problem space.
What's the best case if you're trying to think of like the best argument? What's the best argument for like a service that's like shared by experts and beginners?
I think
Cloudinary or something.
Yeah, all those image services like File Picker, Cloudinary, ImageX.
What do we use for images?
We use ImageX.
And we upload it directly to ImageX?
No.
From the client?
We upload it to S3.
So we sign it. So we have backend code that does signatures.
We upload it to S3. Yeah. We do have signatures, but you could configure your S3 to allow anyone to upload, but yes. We upload to S3 and then ImageX basically
caches it.
Yeah, acts as like a proxy, a reverse proxy.
Yeah.
So it'll, when you request something from ImageX, if it has it, it serves it. If it doesn't have it, it goes to S3. You're usually using ImageX to like resize or crop. So it'll run transformations and then serve it. That's good. I mean, that's pretty good.
It is pretty good. And
I think Stripe might be better.
A better example of like, that's literally how we're doing it. And that's how if a newbie wanted to make a production app in a weekend that they could just charge someone for their art, they would use Stripe.
It's true. I've used Stripe on a project that bills millions of dollars per year. And I used Stripe the day we started EmberMap. And they're both, my mental model of them is both the same. Right. So
that's awesome. Except that you had to write server code for the Stripe stuff. Now, so you see what I'm saying? I'm trying to get to a point where we can go to a conference and talk truly about the whole solution in the same way. Now, Firebase has a Stripe add-on. So you can imagine something like a Firebase layer that might not be responsible for your data, but is like responsible for services. basically, what does it look like for us to use Stripe and not write any backend code? That's why this is so hard. This is so complex, and like we're not there yet today. So it's like, yeah, we can talk about Stripe, but I can't listen to, can I listen to you give a conference talk about using Stripe with Ember and then go home and have everything I need to do it myself? I mean, if I use Rails, maybe.
Wait. So
I know Rails.
So not for every single problem, but like if you just wanted to sell something online, you could use Stripe. You don't need a backend component.
Okay.
But for us, like think about the Ember Map example. Like we need a backend component because when you buy an Ember Map subscription, you get access to all of our videos. So now we need to know which videos you have access to. Also, people on your team have access. So we need to know who the people on your team are. So there's more than just creating the subscription.
But that's fine. I think what you want is the progressive complexity solution, like the progressively complex.
I think Stripe. Yeah, would satisfy this.
So I could make a Vue app that has, let's say, static data, like it's just static routes that are protected. And I know that those are shipped to the client. That's fine, but it's going to be really nice, and people are going to want to pay $5 for that. Or let's just say I add a tip button that lets you tip me through Stripe.
Yeah, I think you can do that today.
You can do that today without a server.
So I have not built this type of app, so I'm not sure. But yes.
But if you were going to do that, you would use Stripe.
I would use Stripe, and I would look at, I would absolutely look at not doing a backend piece until I needed that. So yes.
So I think that's kind of like an interesting way to think about it, because
I'm like mentally just going through all these things I've used. File Picker is a really good one.
Yep.
Because File Picker, you can upload a photo and it goes to their servers, and then they do transforms when a client fetches that photo.
Yeah.
But then you can progressively add features to it. So like on an app that used File Picker, we needed to back everything up to S3. So like we added that option in later after the fact. Like initially getting started, we just dropped in File Picker and use their API.
Right.
Later we needed it on our S3 server so we could like download and process these images. And
right.
We were able to do that without changing away from Fire Picker, File Picker, or anything like that.
That's good.
I think there was a progressive story there.
Yeah. Yep. That's nice. And the Stripe stuff is good because like, yeah, you could give the conference talk, but then like, yeah, if you need the token for whatever reason, to link things up, you can just get it in your backend. But like the data, not the token or the subscription ID or whatever the data thing is different because like we don't start apps using like Firebase or Google Doc. Maybe we should, but like we don't, and no one does, right? Everyone always makes their API first, and that's the big jump. That's a huge jump.
It is, but you need to because you get locked into like a bad production decision.
That's a problem.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
If you use Google
Docs,
that's
a huge barrier. That's why people are like not wanting to build SPAs, rightfully so, and why SPAs are like such a huge ask in organizations. Because
that's great. My weekend project, I can use Rails with SQLite.
Yeah, exactly.
My weekend project with Ember, I can't use Google Docs. I mean, I could, but then I'm stuck there.
Yeah, but maybe not. Well, maybe, but you are right now in your mind, so you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe there is room in the official guides and tutorials for A, doing an audit of like tools like Google Docs, Firebase, and other backends as a service, and B, showing how you can use those first, and then once you need more control over your backend, to progressively move and graduate to an API of your own. But like, don't worry about that now. Let's just get your dynamic app working as fast as possible with a true dynamic app. But you're not going to have to worry about making an API because it's ridiculous.
It is. I also like this. It's not like, oh, how do we make Rails new --API? Because that's just that's not what we're.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's like you have to go further in that.
You want zero to production app as fast as possible. And like Firebase is awesome, but it's what you said. It's like you're not actually, we don't actually use it because it's like it's a platform. It's separate. It doesn't decompose into these parts the way SQLite turns into SQL or whatever.
MySQL, Postgres, whatever.
Postgres, yeah, exactly. So I want to try that out. I think Mirage could be a cool way to do this too. But that's like a whole nother thing, but it could be.
I love developing Mirage.
It's one conceptual app. That's what I, another thing I like about it.
I think when I'm writing my Mirage code, I'm like envisioning the Rails code.
Right.
So I think that's a problem.
Right, right, right.
I don't think I'm saying like, oh, I'll just make the production decisions later.
Right.
I'm writing Mirage, but I'm like, okay, what does this look like in Rails? What is
right?
What
right,
things
right.
are back end? What is the back end actually doing?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have any more topics we want to talk about?
Or I think we're good on time.
We ranted long enough. Okay, so.
Hey, I still like SPAs.
Well, I was going to say, what was our goal of this? To like lose half of our podcast subscribers?
No, I'm still.
You're on the train?
Hey, if you're selling SBA stock, I'm buying. So.
You're on the bus.
Yeah.
You weren't a week ago.
No, I do not think that we've talked about this. I do not think that dream has been realized.
Right.
And I still think it's doable.
I know. I was like a week ago, I was like, I just want to build like a new business with like a Rails app and like the constraints of like not writing like any JavaScript. And then I thought about it and I was like, man, I don't want to give up my tools. Like the front, when I was working on the stuff, whether it's the video series or the featured Ember map I was working on, it's just like, it's so nice. Like there's so many nice things about modern SBA development. It's awesome.
The thing that does it for me is that an SPA can do everything that a server rendered app can do, but a server rendered app cannot do everything an SPA can do.
Right.
And that the problem is to get the SPA to the level of the server app today.
It's not gradual.
It is. Yes.
It's a step. It's too much of a step.
And those steps are massive.
Yeah. But if there's a, if you can, through sheer force of
smooth
will,
smooth that thing out. Yeah.
Smooth it out. Then you've got a great story where you never have to say no to something because of your architecture, because of your tools.
Yeah.
It's just not there, but it's going to be there. I think it's going to be there through sheer, popularity and momentum that's already built, even outside of our Ember bubble. If you look at what's being developed, what developer tools are being developed, how services are evolving, I think it's going to look like that eventually. Today, if you're pragmatic about things and you need to get something done, you're going to have that huge step early on. But I think that's going to come down. And it already has come down. Like to be honest, has come down a lot.
Yep.
But there's still a lot of incidental pain points there. So interesting to think about.
Can I get one of those like sleep pods and just like go into a coma for like 8 years?
Well, I thought, you know.
And then I'll wake up. I'll be like, our SPA is ready. You'll be like, no. And I just slam the door. Wake me in 8 more years.
It's funny because you always think about that. Like when I was learning programming, everyone was like, oh my gosh, like you don't have to do tables layout in CSS. I envy you. I can't believe you're 25 and you're never had to do table layout.
You never had to use one dot gif.
Right, exactly. I know about it. My brother was doing it when I was growing up, but I didn't have to do it myself. And it's like, oh, you're literally the best. And then now I look at people learning and they're like, they don't have to do, you know, it's crazy the maturity of the tools they have. It's always going to be like that. You know, even once SPA development has that smooth on ramp, no one's going to be writing code anymore. So
the ops stuff amazes me. Where when I learned this stuff, I was setting up Apache servers and Nginx servers.
I hated that stuff. I'm so glad that I learned in 20, whenever at 12 I did, so that I basically haven't had to touch that stuff.
That stuff has all just been abstracted away. I mean, DNS, I used to set up like bind servers, and there's none of that anymore.
You're a man of a certain age.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
But seriously, like, yeah, so that's awesome. This stuff can go away.
Yeah. I was asking about this on Twitter about a hosted GraphQL API because I was surprised to find that, like, kind of when you go down this path, Firebase is kind of the only thing. And it's like kind of surprising. There's not really any standardized. Again, if you think about how commoditized our backend is, I want like, the final resource, boom, you get a GraphQL endpoint for it. All the relationships, all the querying. Maybe someone should start that business so I can not write APIs anymore.
Yeah.
That'd be cool, right?
It would.
Also, like, there's something nice about the WordPress story where you can always pull down your WordPress site and host it yourself, but you could also have like WordPress.com host it, right?
Yep.
So that's like where the lock-in stuff is avoided. You can avoid the lock-in if you could have, you know.
Yeah, same with that. We use Heroku for Postgres. Right. We're not locked into it.
Right. But it's so convenient that we choose to use it.
Yeah. And it's like,
but there's a nice progressive story there, right, because we get to use Postgres on our computer locally first.
Yep.
So that's what you want. It's such a nice thing. Oh, I already have a Rails app that works with Postgres. I might as well push it up to Heroku. Boom.
Yeah. And a lot of like what AWS is, like they're like bigger database offerings. They're like MySQL compatible, but under the hood, I mean, they're, who knows what they are. They have like a distributed MySQL. I think it's like Aurora, something like that. Mm-hmm.
You should be their spokesperson.
Yeah. I do.
Today, like, Aurora, everyone.
This podcast is brought to you by AWS.
is it?
But you don't have to think about building a distributed database.
Yeah.
There's just, yeah, it's MySQL compatible. You're using MySQL on your machine. Boom, on ramp.
That's awesome. One day we can dream.
Yeah. All right. I'm getting tired of this.
Okay.
Can we go?
Back to SBA development. if you have anything you'd like for us to talk about in the podcast, let us know at ember_map on Twitter. Thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.